Welcome to the Mystery Twins Detective Agency. I'm Liam S. Smith, and as the protagonist, I am the most progressive guy in the show.
I'm Regan Lloyd, and I'm gonna work harder than you and get less credit, but definitely be the darling of everyone's eye.
This week, we're talking about Victorian feminism as we watch the second episode of Houdini and Doyle.
Thank you for bearing with us last week when we released the Teeves case file on Houdini and Doyle, because flying home from Australia was just a massive fucking spanner in the works of our recording schedule.
And an extra special thank you, because if I recall correctly, that episode had some pretty dreadful audio issues.
Yeah. But we're here. We have learned a lot since we recorded that episode.
Yeah.
Oh God, laughing hurts because I did a belly dance class yesterday, which involves a lot of like isolating your ab muscles. And yeah, I just giggled too much and my lower abdomen was like, no, thank you. None of this.
Man, I hate it when that happens.
Ugh, yeah, exercise, am I right?
Been up to anything else interesting lately, Regan?
No, just catching up on work, basically.
Fair enough.
I'm going to dance classes now because I've done basically no exercise since I moved to England in 2015. I've done two this week.
How you feeling? Sore? Tough? Cool? Nobody's full?
They're also both disciplines that I am not good at.
Right.
So it's a fun challenge.
Does that just apply to dance in general?
That I'm not good at it?
Hmm.
How fucking dare you?
Hey, I'm asking you. I'm not firing shots off the starboard bow.
No, I did like 8 years of ballet. So I'm good at that. But I'm doing one like sort of 1930s blues fossy sort of
jazz tap.
It's not tap, but it is that sort of like sexy jazz, and then one beginner belly dance class. And they are both involve a lot of like fluid movement and stuff that I am not trained in.
I sure hope nobody at your sexy jazz class kills someone with a trumpet.
There was a lot of reference to Cell Block Tango.
I'm talking about...
I know you're talking about...
The thing in that TV show
yeah,
I watched.
Yeah, I know, but...
Okay.
Also speaking about sexy jazz murder, Chicago.
Certainly is a city.
Oh, Liam, what are we going to do with you?
I know.
What have you been doing? How's your job going?
Good. It's been going well. It took me a bit to adjust, but there's nothing really interesting I can say about it other than I have a new job and it's going well.
Well, that's good. That's a...
Yeah.
You know, can't ask for a lot more than that.
Shall we start talking about podcast content?
Absolutely.
So before we start talking about episode 2 of Houdini and Doyle...
Yeah.
What?
Oh, I just thought that, shall we start talking about podcast content? Okay, before we do...
We have it is podcast content, but it's a new segment.
Oh, is this the new segment that I named at like 1 a.m. one day?
It certainly is.
Yes.
This segment's called What's the River Deal?
Yes. So because we decided to stop watching Riverdale for the podcast so we could just binge it, we are now watching Riverdale in our own lives. And we want to keep talking about it because... Fuck me, this is a compelling mystery.
4 episodes have come out since we last talked about Riverdale. We're speaking up to episode 6, Faster Pussycats, Kill Kill.
Yes, so this is the episode. If you don't want Riverdale spoilers, then skip ahead 5 minutes. So this
and then see how we're doing.
Yeah, this is the episode where we find out that I was right in my prediction. And Polly is pregnant with Jason Blossom's baby.
And didn't know that he was dead.
Oh yeah, that was fucked up.
Yeah. Also some stuff happened that seems to have entirely blown over about, you know, people finding out about Archie and Mrs. Gunderson, and also the real Miss Grundy was actually super old like her name implies, but she's dead and Mrs. Gunderson stole her identity.
Yeah.
And then she left town, and as she was leaving, she scoped out some more boys with her Lolita glasses on, and it was like, damn.
Yeah, like, okay, there was a sex criminal, but don't worry about it.
She's gone to a better place now.
Yeah, it was very weird. But I suspect that is not the last we'll see of Mrs. Gunderson.
No, quite right.
And there's a bunch of B-plots that are like...
There's an ongoing saga that every adult in the town, except for maybe Archie's dad, is just the worst.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that is bad.
Like, obviously, Alice Cooper is the worst, but...
Is her name actually Alice Cooper?
It is, yes.
That's never dawned on me before.
You come into her home and she's like, welcome to my nightmare. It's my family, because I'm terrible.
She's just the worst.
Turns out her husband is also quite terrible.
Yep.
But they are also just kind of on the same level with how sort of ridiculously evil everyone in the Blossom family is.
Yeah, and also, like...
In the episode prior to the one that we're going to be focusing on momentarily, Cheryl invites Veronica to come and stay at her house before Jason's second funeral, and they're having dinner, and it's just this awful, dark... Veronica later describes her life as the gothic tragedy that is Cheryl's life, and they're all just sitting in this darkened dining room, sniping at each other, and there's this ancient woman there with a streak of red in her hair who never talks.
Except she thinks... Oh, no, that's the next episode. Yeah.
I think it was later that episode.
Oh.
But yeah, it's like something... If anyone who's listening has played Resident Evil 7, it's like that, but less hillbilly-ish.
I will take your word for it. And also, it looked like Mrs. Lodge was the shining beacon of hope in the awful parent clan, but nope.
She's up to some shenanigans. I think she's probably still better than most.
That's true.
You know, I want to dial back, actually, because the Kevin, is that his name?
The gay one?
Yeah.
Yes.
His dad, we don't see much of him, but his dad is surprisingly, like, really chill. He's the sheriff. He knows his son's gay. He's cool with it.
That's true, actually. I'm pleased that that's not, like, a source of tension in the show. That they've decided not to have, like, a shitty parent.
Boilerplate closet plot.
Yeah.
And then in this most recent episode, there was a lot of focus on Josie and the Pussycats.
Yes.
You like those characters, don't you?
I love them.
Do
also
you
love...
talk about what happened at all?
I can't remember. It was just a lot of infighting.
Yeah, what was her name? Val?
Yes. Val.
What?
I love
her. All right. She wanted to write songs with Archie, and Josie was being a queen bee this episode.
But it turns out it's just because her dad is a jazz musician who thinks that pop is not a valid art form, and he was coming to the concert, and that's why she's been stressed.
Yeah, her dad, both of her parents are pretty terrible too. Like, I've talked about the podcast Sex Archie. They, I think, quite rightly observed that between her two parents, she can't be good enough for them on a commercial level with her mum. And then even while failing to appease her mum on that level, she's failing to meet her dad's artistic expectations.
Yeah, it's just a lose-lose situation for her.
Yeah. Though her mum is more supporting than her dad is, as we see over the course of the episode, where they do a big disco performance with Veronica guesting at the end of the episode, and everyone cheers, but right towards the end, her dad walks out in disgust, and we later see her mum comforting her in the bathroom.
Yeah, it's a weird time. It's a weird time.
Yeah. Meanwhile...
Oh, wait, hi. Sorry. It's our 5 minutes are up, so just go ahead another 5 minutes. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. There's a lot of Riverdale to unpack.
Yeah. Sorry, go on.
Meanwhile, Jughead and Betty keep investigating a murder.
Yes.
They find a car with drugs in it. Jughead touches the car, the drugs, and then they go and get the sheriff, and then they come back and the car is on fire. And also they made out.
Oh, they did. I am here for this relationship, to be honest.
What's Archie going to think about that, though?
I don't give a shit.
Is it any of his business? No.
No. He needs some therapy to unpack his role in Mrs. Gunderson's life, I think, before he gets involved with any age-appropriate people.
I love now how that the Mrs. Gunderson plot has resolved itself for now, at least. All of Archie's friends have these plots about murder and embezzlement and corruption, and he's just off to the side like, yeah, you know, I'm good at football, but I think my real passion's music, and I'm just kind of having trouble choosing between them, you know?
He's the refreshing everyman.
He's just so much more apparently wholesome than the rest of them now.
Well, I wouldn't say he's more wholesome. Like, I think a lot of them are quite wholesome. Oh, there's also...
What I mean to say, his life is in a much more wholesome state than theirs at the moment, since they're all, up to their neck. They're up to their necks in drama, and he's just being like, yeah, Val, you could help me write some songs, yeah? But, I accidentally upset Veronica because she said that since you wouldn't sing with me, she would. But, oh, no. Oh, how am I going to make this up?
That's
I'm having trouble with stage fright because I see werewolves in the audience.
That was weird and never explained.
It was just a metaphor for visual metaphor for fear, I guess.
Yeah, but it was weird because he also had a mask that was identical to what he saw when he looked down.
I guess he was afraid of werewolves when he got that mask.
Yeah, I don't know. So yeah, that was a weird time. Weird time.
And then Archie and Val smooched.
Yeah, so that was a twist to the Archie Betty Veronica love triangle. But it doesn't
matter.
Did
Veronica see that? Did I remember that correctly?
I can't remember.
I think so, and she was like, oh.
Oh, no.
Also, even though Betty and Archie have barely interacted lately. When he was singing his song on the stage at the talent show, she had a moment before they ran back to the abandoned car with the drugs and the evidence, where she was like, Archie's singing over the PA. Meaningful glance.
Yeah, but also, I just really want Betty and Jughead to be together.
But I want Jughead to just be in love with burgers.
Also a valid point, yeah. We also found out in this episode that Liam was right and Jughead is homeless.
I think I already knew that by the time I said that.
Oh, well, sorry for believing in you. yeah, he's been living in the cinema, which is about to get demolished. And also his dad is the...
Southside Serpent?
Yeah.
That's the name of the gang that he's a member of.
Oh, also Kevin is hooking up with one of the Southside Serpents.
Oh, yeah, that was a fun little twist on what we thought was going to be a terrifying gay-bashing subplot.
Yeah, so that's going to be a Romeo and Juliet story for the ages.
Hmm.
Anyway, so basically we still don't know what's happening with the murder.
So it turns out that Cheryl Blossom's great-grandfather killed Betty's great-grandfather over maple syrup.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's...
and that's why they hate each other. That's why their families hate each other.
Yup. But the murder still intrigues me. I need to know what happened. And that's where we're at.
Basically, yeah. And we'll be discussing it next time on What's the River Deal?
We did it.
Did you know that the Archies wrote that Sugar Honey Honey song?
I did, yeah.
Okay. And did you know that, and they use this as the theme song for Sex Archie, the podcast, in the probably late 90s or early 2000s Return to Riverdale TV movie, they did a terrible cover of it with Jughead and his son rapping it.
Oh my God.
It's possibly one of the worst things I've ever heard.
I'm going to have to look that up immediately.
You will. You must.
Yes. Good. All right. Well, that concludes What's the River Deal for this week.
Okay. On to Mystery Twins Detective Agency.
Yes. So, Houdini and Doyle. Now, when the fuck did we watch episode one?
Many moons ago.
Let me see if I can find it.
It was a simpler time. Harold Houdini and Arthur Conan Doyle placed a bet about whether a nun was a ghost murder, whether a nun was murdered by a ghost or just by a regular person.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Okay.
that was something like what it was about.
Oh, 5th of June 2016.
Oh.
A simpler time.
We were still living in a Barack Obama world.
We were, yeah. Basically, it doesn't matter that we watched it ages ago because there's no through line in these episodes.
Not really,
They're
no.
They're all just episodic mysteries, which is what I want from a show.
Yeah, for our podcast's purposes, ideally.
But also just in my life. Like, I know I've complained before about iZombie. Like, I love it, but I just, the overarching plot bogs it down too much, and I just want a fun crime procedural about a zombie using her brain-eating skills to solve crime.
Fair enough. I mean, isn't that what really we all want in our lives?
Well, exactly. I don't think I'm alone in that. Obviously, because that show exists and hasn't been cancelled yet.
Unlike this show, which shouldn't have been cancelled, frankly,
from
the two episodes that I've ever watched of it.
I was thinking about it.
It's fun. It's fun.
I think this show is like what it must be like having children, where it's so close, it just needs to try a little bit harder, but there's literally nothing you can do to push it. I only think about that because...
Are you talking about giving birth or having
children? Oh my God. No, I meant like children. Ugh.
Like raising children.
Raising children.
Yeah. Because that's what I thought you meant at first. But then your metaphor sort of was talking about pushing a lot.
Oh, no. Gross.
Okay.
Not for me. No, because the episode had a lot of like focus on raising children and how difficult it is.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, that's what this show is like, where like there's only so much you can do. And like, we're just trapped watching this show being like, oh, but you're so close to being perfect. Obviously, I know nothing about raising children. So... fucking that could be not at all an apt metaphor, but also like things like this I'm like, but Parks and Recreation season one is really bad.
Yeah,
and that's an amazing show because it was given the opportunity.
Well, apparently it was cancelled due to low ratings, so
yeah, well fucking just give it another season to breathe.
Anyway, no use crying over spilt mysteries. Persons of Interest, season one, episode two, A Dish of Adama.
What does that mean?
I don't know. Oh, Adama, that's... Dharma is... I know Dharma is a concept in, like, Hindu stuff.
Oh, like reincarnation, because that was the focus of the episode.
Adama is the Sanskrit antonym of Dharma. It means that which is not in accord with the Dharma. Connotations include unnaturalness, wrongness, evil, immorality, wickedness, and vice.
Well, there you go.
And there was a lot of talk about, like, the morality of Victorian women in this episode, I guess.
Well, also murder.
Yes, true.
I think that's probably the wrong thing.
I mean, that's par for the course in every episode of these shows.
You make a very good point, yeah.
And there were no dishes, so.
Sorry, continue with your POA.
Yes. Michael Weston plays Harry Houdini, the famous escape artist and skeptic of the supernatural.
What's he done?
I forgot to note that down, so I'm pulling it up now. Weston played Kenny in Garden State, Deputy Enos Strait in the 2005 Dukes of Hazzard movie, and Danny in Coyote Ugly.
Coyote Ugly, I love that movie.
He's also been in two episodes of Psych.
Ayy!
Which I feel obligated to get back to at some point.
Yeah, I was just about to say, we're not necessarily done with Psych, it just because of the way that... Yes.
I feel, in retrospect, I have mixed feelings on our decision to continue with it, because A, we really didn't enjoy it, but B, it seems only fair to consider that maybe the oppressive heat was a factor in our hating it.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think we necessarily hated it. I think we just hated all the time that we spent watching it and talking about it.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll be back to that probably when we're done with our run on Houdini and Doyle,
yes.
However long that may be. Stephen Mungan plays Arthur Conan Doyle, writer of Sherlock Holmes and believer in the supernatural. If we didn't mention, this is a show which purports to may or may not be about ghosts.
Yeah, I love it. It's like, it's just Arthur Conan Doyle believes in religion and ghosts and the supernatural, and Harry Houdini believes in japes and tricks and sleight of hand.
They are both arseholes. They are assisted by beleaguered female constable.
Adelaide Stratton.
That's right.
Light of my life.
And we'll get to her momentarily. Stephen Mungan was in Episodes playing Mr. Episodes.
Episodes is the best.
It's a good show. He played Dirk Gently in a 2010 adaptation of that property.
Oh, that's interesting to me.
Hmm.
Yep.
And he's been in a couple of other things like Green Wing. And
yes.
Apparently he was a voice in Watership Down, a TV series. Did not know there was
very
a TV
depressing.
Series of Watership Down.
That's the one about the rabbits, right?
Yeah, that's the terrifying slash depressing thing where rabbits fight each other or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because there was another thing that I read around the same time that was about, like, medieval mice.
Red Wolf?
Yeah! Yeah! I'm pretty sure that was it.
I never got into that.
Well, we had mandated 1 hour of silent reading every day in primary school, so I got through a lot of books.
That's when I read the Harry Potters for the most part, and the
That's
Lords of the Ring.
When I read all of the Tomorrow When the War Began series.
Oh, they spooked me as a kid. They were too real.
Yeah. I didn't like the second series.
The Ellie Chronicles?
Yeah, because it opens with, like, a second tragic war invasion sort of thing, I think.
How does it?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
And I was like, can't these characters catch a break?
Rebecca Lydiard plays Adelaide Stratton, the beleaguered female detective who assists Houdini and Doyle. She plays Ella in a something called Mislabeled, which as in Miss, like Mrs. Mislabeled, which IMDb describes as a witty vlog-style comedy series set in the fast-paced, high-pressure world of fashion.
I want to watch that immediately because I love her and I think she is great.
Likewise.
All right, next week on the Mystery Twins Detective Agency, Mislabeled.
Well, maybe it's Mislabeled. It's MS. How do you pronounce
that? Yeah, then that's Ms.
Okay.
Because she doesn't, I don't know. I was going to, you know, the sort of point I was trying to make. Thanks, everyone, for your understanding.
I don't think I do.
You know, it was about feminism and stuff.
Yeah, but she's not playing the same character in that.
Yeah, but she's still a person in the arts. I don't, okay, listen.
Samuel Joslin plays Peter Bennett, a child who believes he's an adult.
Yeah, basically.
Samuel played Jonathan Brown in the 2014 Paddington Bear movie, which
Amazing.
I believe has a sequel currently in production.
Oh.
Also, Laura Fraser plays Lydia Bellworth, a prominent suffragette.
What's she done?
She was Lydia Rodarte Quayle in Breaking Bad.
Oh, that's where I recognised her from.
Also Kate in A Knight's Tale and other things.
Ah, I love that as well. good job. Yay. That pleases me. I love A Knight's Tale so much.
I don't think I've really seen it.
It is peak attractive Heath Ledger.
Did he tell you how he got those scars?
From jousting. That's the whole plot of the movie.
All right.
Didn't expect that, did ya? Ha.
I did not. You've schooled me with my own petard.
Schooled you with your own jousting stick.
Finally, Andrea Lowe plays Beatrice Upton, the wife of a man who, the man that the child believes he is.
Yeah, she's got a pretty tragic storyline in this.
Yeah, she played DCI Annie Cabot in a show called DCI Banks.
Cool.
Which maybe we'll watch on this podcast one day.
I'll put it on the list.
Yeah, right. Do you want to talk about this episode?
No, I'm done.
All right. We'll see you next time on the Mystery Twins Detective Agency. I've been Liam S. Smith from Baghdad.
Were you doing that Charlie Pickering bit in your head?
Sure was, yeah.
Yes. But that's
the way the cookie crumbles.
No, we have some quality podcasts to produce.
We open with a child, Peter Bennett, having some sort of nightmare. There's a big iron gate. There's a gunshot. There's some other shenanigans. And then we cut to a suffrage protest.
Yep. And then well, we know someone's about to get murdered because we
see a lot of shout. We see a lot of, like, beardy men shouting at Lydia Bellworth, who has handcuffed herself to something.
Just a railing, I think.
She is railing against the Victorian patriarchy.
Ha! That was good.
Women, the right to vote.
Yes.
She says specifically, vote for the men who govern us. So, like, realism there, I guess.
Well, I think she was trying to say that we're not trying to take anything away from men. We're just trying to, like, have a say. I think it sounded less weird in the context of the entire sentence that I've forgotten.
To me, it struck me as a case of, like, picking your battles. Start with this, then move on to that.
Yeah.
And then the child, Peter, approaches her in the crowd with some flowers.
And she's like, oh, are they for me? And then he fucking shoots her and says, you murdered me.
Yeah. It was shot in an interesting way because he said it. They sort of, like, piped the crowd noise in at the time, so you could just barely make out him saying, you murdered me. Blat, blat, blat.
Yeah, I had subtitles on, so I was fine.
Okay.
But I agree, it was interesting. Also, I liked your gun noises. Blat, blat, blat.
That's the noise guns make.
Yeah, absolutely.
Haven't you ever heard a gun before?
I mean, I haven't, but it tracks what you're saying.
So, long story short, he's taken in and there are newspaper headlines about, like, boy avengers past life murder. Inevitably, this attracts the attention of writer and kook Arthur Conan Doyle.
Don't call him a kook for his beliefs, you belief shamer.
But he believes in ghosts and shit.
Yeah, but, you know, everyone's entitled to their unorthodox belief system.
I wish I believed in ghosts and shit.
It would make life so much more interesting. Think about how much
it would.
Your life is unenriched by your skepticism.
Right. Houdini also swans into the police station because he's like, I saw the headlines and I knew he'd be here. I waited outside for like 15 minutes and he showed up.
Classic. Japes.
Now, oftentimes we're led to believe by the synopsis for this show and the first episode that these two will set a wager regarding the outcome of the mystery. And this week's episode is slightly different.
There is a wager, but it's about their quote-unquote comely constable.
Whether or not she'll agree to go to dinner with Houdini.
More like Houdinery. Your silence speaks volumes. So,
£20.
Yeah, so that's a...
I guess it does kind of key into the overlying themes of, like, sexism regarding the episode, but not really relevant to the case at hand. It's B-plot stuff.
Yeah, and the only reason they get her involved in the case in the first place is that there is a...
they've got the kid in the cell.
Yeah, and they can't get him to talk, and maybe he'll respond better to a woman.
And she's like, oh, so if I can't get him to talk, I'm a bad interrogator, but if I do, it's because I'm a woman, huh?
And they're like, ooh.
Oh.
But she does get him to talk.
By being, like, motherly towards him after being tough doesn't work.
But, and they find out his name is Martin Upton, which does correspond with a missing persons case, but Martin Upton was 29 years old, so what?
Yeah, what? Oh, so it was a few years ago, I think.
Yes, so it was.
Yes. But he's like, yeah, I'm Martin Upton. Here, let me out of the cell and I'll take you around my neighbourhood. Look, there's my dog Scramps, or whatever his name was.
I think it was Scamp.
Look, there's the vicar that married me and my wife Beatrice. Hi, I'm going to go say hi to you. And he's like, hi, I'm the vicar. Do I know you?
Yeah, and then he's like, oh, you married me and Bea. And Doyle is very smug because how else would this child know this if he was not the reincarnation of Martin Upton?
Oh, we also skipped over the fact that they're continuing to investigate because Lydia believes that someone in the government hired this kid to kill her.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was weird. It just seems a bit like you've got major tickets on yourself if you think that the government hired a child to shoot you.
Well, I wasn't going to say it. She also, when she met them in that same scene, she spoke to Stratton a bit, being like, I'm so impressed that you're a female constable. That's really, really a step forward for all of us. And then she looks at Artie and says, killing Holmes was a grave error in judgment. And also, I've been to your shows, Mr. Houdini, and you're a hack and you trade in gullibility. Bye.
Suck it, men! Yeah, I was all for that.
Also, the kid has a scar in the shape of a bullet on his head, which is unusual.
Oh, yeah, because that's where he got shot as Martin Upton.
In his past life.
Yeah. How do they explain that at the end?
They don't.
Because they refer to it as like a birthmark and then like stage makeup. So
I think because I'd be very surprised if any of these episodes end being like, oh, it was ghosts. But they solve a mystery and then I think they're sort of seeding some unanswered questions so that Arthur Conan Doyle can keep being like, but your science can't explain everything.
Ah, right, okay, yes.
And that was one of those things in this episode.
Should we just breeze on through the B-plot about Arthur Conan Doyle's family?
Yeah, sure.
So this whole episode is about suffragettes and stuff, and there's also like a nice little B-plot where Arthur Conan Doyle's daughter doesn't want to go to housewifery school.
It sort of curtails the two themes of the suffragette issue and also the parent issue that comes up with the kid Peter Bennett.
Yes. It's a good dovetail of these things. Mm. So she doesn't want to go to housewifery school, and you know, why doesn't her brother have to do that? I did enjoy Arthur Conan Doyle being like, because he's 8 and he would destroy our house. But yeah, basically he can't give her a compelling reason why, or a compelling thing that women can do that men can't, except have children. And she's like,
which when he says it, you can see in his face that he's like, yeah, I know this isn't gonna fly.
And then the nanny housekeeper, I don't know.
Yep.
Tells him 2 days in a row that his daughter has been a truant and not gone to school. But on the second day, she finds in the girl's backpack a letter home saying that it was Mother's Week at housewifery school. We also find out in this episode, I don't think it was actually explained in episode 1, that Doyle's wife has tuberculosis and she's been unresponsive for 6 months.
I think we knew, but he hadn't told Houdini and
Stratton. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think we knew she was not dead, but we didn't know why. What was wrong with her. So then there's a very sweet scene where he's like, I'm so sorry for not thinking of this. I just didn't think that anyone could miss your mum as much as I do. And it was very sweet.
Yeah. I feel like they resolved that in the best way they could, given that for a fair amount of the episode, he almost came off a bit hypocritical because he was out. A lot of the dynamic in this episode was Stratton making assertions about the value of women in society, and then Houdini would make some glib remark, and then Doyle would be like, oh, that's terrible, I agree that I'm so progressive, blah, 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 blah. And then he would go home and be like, go to housewife school, child.
Yeah, so, you know, I agree. This is the sort of thing where the show shouldn't have been cancelled because it obviously kind of knew what it was doing and it was just needed a bit more time to, like, develop.
I mean, it could get terrible in the next 8
episodes. It could, listen,
we don't
you make
know.
A very good point. But this is the sort of glimmer of hope that we see in this TV show.
Yes.
So let's crowdfund season 2, great.
Netflix original.
Oh, let's write to Netflix.
Dear
Netflix.
Dr. Netflix.
How are you? I hope you are well.
I hope you have recovered from your Santa Clarita diet. I've never actually watched that show.
Me neither, but I know it's about zombies.
Yeah. So this A-plot.
Yeah. Where are we at with it?
They come to the place where he's like, oh, this is the place where I died. And we get some shots of the dandy hunks digging up bones.
Yeah, I was super into this. I don't know why. I was just like, yes.
It was good. They were both wearing like finery but getting dirty.
Yeah. Which basically I think is the appeal of Poldark from the like 3 minutes of it that I've seen.
I don't know what that is.
You know what Poldark is?
No.
It's like a big historical drama, romance, sexy.
Oh, I think my mum might watch that.
Yeah, exactly. It's a mum show. But Patty got really into it. So.
Right. So they dig up these bones.
Yes, yes.
Oh, and they find this ring that says MU love BU, loves BU on it, which is Martin Upton loves Beatrice Upton, the wife of the deceased. They go see her.
MU plus BU forever.
Rather, they break into her house and then they investigate a bit, then she pulls a gun on them. I didn't know it was so easy to get guns in Victorian England.
No, I would have thought they were, like, a bit cost prohibitive.
Where did this urchin got one? This woman has one?
Well, I assume Peter Belfield stole it, his one, to be fair.
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't think a child could buy a gun.
And long story short, they find out, A, that he does drawings of women, that this missing man, Martin Upton, did drawings of scantily dressed women, and that he was sleeping with some of them, that his wife knew and they had an argument the night that he disappeared, that, what else? Oh, that Lydia, the shooting victim, was one of these women.
And had lied to the police when they asked her if she knew the name Martin Upton.
Yeah.
So they go to confront her about that, and she's like,
at some
like,
point, Peter escapes.
I don't think that's yet.
Oh, okay, sorry.
So they go to confront her about it, and she's like, well, I couldn't have that coming up and, like, undermining my work for the cause.
Oh, the band.
Yeah. No one's going to take me seriously as a violinist if they know that I posed for some scantily clad pictures. That was a dumb joke.
Yep. So that happens, and then they had left the kid handcuffed up outside, and when they get up there, Houdini shows him how to trick the mechanism
slip
on
the
handcuffs to slip them, and he says, voila, that's French for wow.
But this comes back to bite them, because later he just slips,
the cuffs
later.
And leaves.
Yeah.
Voila, that's French for yum.
No, isn't petit miam French for little yum?
I
you
was
were doing
the Yoplait thing.
Oh, I was doing the other French yogurt ad. what does petit miam mean then? If Yoplait is French, why are yogurts all in just so into being French? Yeah.
You think you're better than me, yogurt? I'm more of a go-gurt man myself.
Yeah, the petit miam. The name is French. Oh, it's introduced by Yoplait. It's owned by Yoplait.
Oh, okay.
But
I need a degree of mobility in my girt, so...
You need to have your girt on the go? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
They should do a tie-in with a popular, possibly defunct now, breakfast drink and make a get-up-and-go girt.
Yes. They've just started doing up-and-goes here.
Cool.
And they're, like, advertised as, like, an Australian breakfast.
Oh, okay.
Very weird. It's
Australian cuisine.
Yeah.
All right, let's keep breezing through this episode.
Yes. So.
We also find out that she had an affair with Martin. She ended it, and he was upset by that.
Or so she says.
Long story short, they all get called in to get yelled at by the disgusting police captain because the kid escaped. But he focuses most of his yelling on the
smarmy
jerky
dude.
Detective with the hair. You know the hair that I mean.
Oh, I know the hair. Yeah, the...
A
hipster,
high
hipster
top
Melbourne
fade.
Haircut, yeah.
Yeah. I think possibly Doyle punched him out last episode, I can't remember.
Yeah.
Good thing there were no repercussions from that.
Exactly.
Yeah, they get yelled at and then Stratton's like, oh, by the way, I found out the kid's identity, his name's Peter Bennett, let's go see his parents, they filed a missing persons report. They go see their parents and they're like, the dad has this amazing moustache and they're like, oh, we miss our son so much.
Like, I don't know what happened in this scene because I was just so taken by this guy's moustache.
Yeah. It's you could ride it like a bicycle.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Oh, our son was so imaginative and special and gifted. But then about a year ago, he started to change and he became dark and withdrawn. Want to go take a look at his room?
Yeah, they don't actually mention at any point that it was about the same time he found out he was adopted.
Well, maybe they didn't know that he found out, not that he was adopted.
Yeah, maybe. That's, I guess...
And if they go into his room, they find the journal of Martin Upton hidden on the top of his dresser. They find drawings that look like Martin Upton's drawings.
So what's his kid's obsession with Martin Upton?
Well, they better go find him before he strikes again, because we glammed over this, but there's another woman that Martin was having an affair with, a blonde woman who was chunky apparently or something. How did they describe her?
Yeah, they just kept saying she was heavy set. And then when she showed up, I was like, no.
No, not really. So her life might be in danger too, because he's obsessed with these women who Martin Upton was having an affair with.
Weird, but all right.
There was a sequence in which you described it as a techno music Victorian heist sequence.
I did,
where
yes.
Where Houdini stealths his way into Lydia's office and gets her documents or whatever.
Yeah, it was like...
What really came out of that?
He found out that she had a first husband.
Right.
Who died.
He died.
And her second husband also died.
He brought this to Stratton's knowledge, and that's how they figured out that her first name, her maiden name was like Dunstan
or something.
Yeah, Durst, yeah. And there's a reference in this journal to Durst and Maguire finding out of each other and having a falling out. So maybe the other woman is this Maguire.
Well, that narrows down the amount of blonde, heavyset women in London.
Mm. This revelation takes place in the third of a series of truth trades.
Oh, God, I forgot about these.
Houdini and Stratton do, mostly under the eye of Doyle, who's like, this is dumb, but this one isn't, in which they, you know, if I ask a question, do you have to tell me the truth? And then you get to ask me a question and I get to tell you the truth. So what do we learn over the course of these?
Well, the first one, Houdini asks Stratton if she's a virgin. She's just like, nah. Why did you ask such a humiliating question, you dick? Fucking 10 points to Stratton for that.
And the answer is basically like, my bad.
Yeah.
And then second question, why are you a police officer or whatever? What do you have to prove? And she's like, I have to prove that women have nothing to prove.
She asks him a very cutting question.
She, like, psychoanalyzes him and is like, what did your dad do that messed you up so bad? And he's like, nothing.
But I have to get off the train now. Let's not talk about it. Goodbye.
I'm going to run screaming into the night.
I need to go shake my fist at the moon.
Yeah. And then in this one, they both answer the same question, ostensibly, which is, what are you most afraid of? And they both write their answers down on a piece of paper and swap them over. And apparently they've both written down the same thing, which is being unloved.
Aww.
Ugh.
That's a nice thing to bond over.
Apparently, though a later scene kind of undercuts it.
Yeah, listen.
Long story short, we get ominous shot. I'm saying long story short a lot this episode. I think it's because we're just meandering around this plot a lot.
Yeah, we are.
We get shots from the point of view of an assailant approaching Maguire's door. The person opens it and we see a blonde woman standing with her back to the door and several shots are fired into that person. And as the assailant goes to leave, Doyle comes around the corner and snatches the gun.
And then, oh, the assailant's Lydia.
And the victim was Houdini wearing a dress, a wig, and a lot of bulletproof undercoating.
So I remember thinking at this point, like, wow, that's weird that the Maguire has such a, like, manly death groan.
No, I saw it coming a mile off, personally.
Oh, well, sozmagoz.
I mean, I really fucked up on the rest of the mystery, but...
I just like, didn't even do
could,
a mystery.
I could tell they weren't going to show us... They weren't going to show us a woman being shot to death just for no reason.
I mean, yeah, that makes a lot of sense if you had thought ahead like I did not.
Oh, then the real Maguire's there and is like, I loved him, you bitch.
Yeah, and then it turns out that Lydia was actually pregnant with his child and she was like, let's get married, and he laughed in her face and that's why she had to murder him.
Yeah, and then it also turns out that...
But also, like, Lydia, he was already married. What did you expect was going to come out of that conversation?
Or was he just engaged?
No, because he tells the Reverend.
That's right, yeah.
Exactly.
So then she goes into this whole talk about how, like, they had this whole conversation about how her mother told her the child was stillborn, but turns out it wasn't stillborn. Turns out it's Henry Bennett or whatever his name is.
Peter Belfield.
Peter Bennett.
Who's Peter Belfield?
I don't know.
All right.
According to the IMDb page for this episode, William Butler Yeats... Or Yates, I think it's pronounced, was in it at some point, but I don't remember ever seeing him.
Nope.
You know, the Irish poet.
Yeah. I don't remember seeing him, is what I meant.
Because the first episode had a whole scene about, like, Houdini having townhouse parties with famous Victorian people, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
So maybe there was a cut scene with something like that.
Yeah, maybe. Hmm.
So, yeah, and he found his dad's, his biological dad's, journal, found out that he was adopted, had some sort of mental break where he came to believe he was his dead dad and had to avenge himself.
So interestingly, if that had never happened, they would never have caught Lydia Belfield.
Yeah.
So that's good, I guess. Because I guess I was always expecting their cases to be more inextricably linked. But they weren't really. It was just that, you know what I mean? You know what I'm trying to say?
Which cases?
Okay, so it seems like a weird coincidence to have the illegitimate child of someone try to murder his mum. Without knowing that it's his mum.
Knowing that she was the mum,
Also, his mum is trying to murder someone else and has murdered there's just so much happening.
I think you're blocking that up in a way that's more complicated than it is, though, because he is trying to murder a woman that he knew his dad was sleeping with and who he believes has since murdered his dad.
I guess, yeah.
But I did think the adoption reveal came a bit out of left field in a way that I didn't find entirely satisfying.
Yeah, I agree.
But that taken care of, we move into the wrapping up portion of the episode. We get that scene you described earlier where Doyle talks to his daughter and is like, oh, we both loved your mum.
His Doyle-ta.
All right.
One day when we're famous, someone's going to have a Wikipedia entry of all my bad portmanteaus and it's going to be my greatest shame.
I would criticise you for that, but I have an equally bad one in the quiver for a segment or so down the line.
I'm excited.
I also may have made the same joke on our last Who Didn't Eat Doyle episode.
Oh, did you?
It doesn't matter. I can't remember.
Oh, well.
But it seems like something I would do.
It's a lifetime ago, Liam. No one remembers.
For the finale of our wrap-up, Houdini gets his date with Stratton. They discuss the themes of the episode in a pretty vague way. But the fun thing that they establish is that she's like, so the greatest fear truth trade trick, that was some sort of scam you pulled on me, right? And he starts pulling out slips of paper saying things like losing a child, being alone.
Spiders.
Yeah, that was a good one.
And then he's like, oh, so you knew it was a trick, but you agreed anyway to come to dinner with me.
Having been a bit of an arsehole, RE women, for most of the episode, still better than all of the other men on the police force, but regardless, he gives this sort of very heartfelt speech about how his magician mentor was a hack and a fraud, and that disheartened him for a while, but you can lose your respect for a person without losing your respect for their cause, because Stratton is grappling with the fact that her suffragette idol is a murderer.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing that this episode really sets up in an interesting way is, will they?
I think they might, yeah.
Yeah, just maybe. And then counterpoint, won't they?
Yeah, I know. Mm. It's an interesting question.
I mean, really, this one is just a race against the clock, since there's only 8 more episodes.
Yeah. Will they before the show gets cancelled?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a fun, ill-fated Romeo and Juliet story, which I think I've already said this episode.
Yeah. No, we were talking about Romeo and Juliet before we started recording.
We were, yeah. I would highly recommend that movie.
For some reason, Emily's boyfriend Patrick desperately wanted to tell me that there's a movie coming out in 2018 called Sherlock Gnomes.
Yeah, it's because we watched Romeo and Juliet last night.
Okay.
And it has the most insane cast. It's like James McAvoy, Emily Blunt, Michael Caine, Maggie Smith, Ozzy Osbourne, Patrick Stewart, Jason Statham. Like, how did this happen? I love it.
How did this get made?
How did so many people agree to do this?
Patrick Stewart is no stranger to slumming in animated movies, though.
Is he not?
He played a talking tree in Legends of Oz, Dorothy's Return.
Well, there you go.
It's time for us to unveil our mystery envelopes in which we reveal, could we correctly guess who committed the crime before the show reveals it?
I didn't do one.
Did you have any guests that you want to share on the honour system?
Honestly, like, I had no idea what was happening in this entire episode. So, no. My mystery envelope is blank like my brain, apparently. But you...
I wrote mine at 34 minutes in, just at the start of the scene where Truth Trade 3 happens.
Yep.
And I was way off. I thought this was going to be like, you see these sort of things in occasional mystery shows. We've done a few on this podcast where there appears to be a murder, but there isn't one, in fact. So my guess was suicide and mental illness. On suicide, my note was that he had been cast out by all the women in his life and he had a fit of self-loathing over striking his wife the night they had an argument. She tells us that.
No, I mean, like, this is a very in-depth guess.
And so he took his own life in self-hatred and shame. And then on the mental illness, I wrote, ghosts aren't real.
That's
hence the son's mental break thing.
I mean, I think I just always suspected that someone had put this poor child up to murder.
I also really feared for a lot of the episode that we were dealing with another hypnosis plot.
Yeah. But mercifully, no, just ghosts.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Reincarnation, specifically.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot to make the pun.
Please do.
It was Introduction to the Mystery Envelope segment in which we discuss, not in this case, who done it, but maybe who deen it.
Yes, that was worth going back for.
Was it though?
Absolutely. I just said Doyle-ta, come on. Like, who deen it is way better.
We deserve each other.
Yes.
Okay, let's move on to our next segment in which we need to decide, is this a cold case or we will be returning to Houdini and Doyle for another week?
I mean, I have faith in it.
Whereas I am more skeptical. What an interesting dynamic for a mystery solving show.
Yeah, God. I just want it to succeed so badly, even though I know it doesn't.
Yeah, it's like watching the Star Wars prequels and knowing that Anakin's going to become Darth Vader.
I'm sure it is. I would be happy to watch another one, but I feel like that would be maybe my limit.
Okay. I would be very happy to watch another one and would probably consider watching more beyond that, but that's a discussion for another time.
It is. All right. Well, we have reached an accord.
Yes.
Wonderful. Well, that's good. So congratulations to us. If you would like to recommend a show
Do we have a mystery of the week?
Oh, sorry. Yes. We don't. Do we? Okay. Let me check the emails.
I was reading about the Mary Celeste earlier today, but I also discussed that on my other podcast this week.
Didn't we already talk about it?
Did we?
What is it?
It's the ship that everyone went missing on.
I'm sure we've done that already.
Oh, okay. No, we talked about the bloop and... Did we do the Mary Celeste?
I think we did.
Write in and let us know what mysteries of the week we've done.
Or just give us a new one. So, yeah, that's cool. That's a thing.
You can reach us at...
Mystery of the Week, what's our email address?
mtdapod@gmail.com. Yes. And the same handle on Twitter.
Yes, we are at mtdapod on Twitter. Stay tuned for some...
bullshit.
Yep. And yes, if you've got shows to recommend, mysteries to give us, just kind notes about how well we're doing in our lives, then please get in touch. I... would also like to apologize to Kate because I keep meaning to email you back and forgetting, but it is literally the next thing on my to-do list.
Well, hopefully you'll remember before a week from now when this episode comes out.
Before we finish editing this episode. No, I'm sure I will. But don't take my lack of replying as not appreciating emails. It warms the cockles of my heart to have people actually enjoying the show.
That is actually very lovely, yeah.
Yes, so...
Because, you know, we do this because we enjoy it, but...
Yeah.
At a certain point, that has diminishing returns.
It does. Yeah, so, yes, do pop us an email, friends. And until next week, no yachts.
We're not really twins.
Yeah!